DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Father Joe Kemp, who is the founder of Gospel Values, a nonprofit company dedicated to proclaiming the beautiful message of Jesus for children of all ages. Father Joe is perhaps best known for his video works, which include a series of DVDs for children called Big Al Live, as well as recent DVDs on the Eucharist. With Father Joe Kemp, we go inside the pages of No One Cries the Wrong Way, Seeing God Through Tears, and Sometimes Life is Just Not Fair, Hope for Kids Through Grief and Loss, both published by Our Sunday Visitor. Father Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
My goodness, Chris, it's an honor to be with you.
Well, actually, the honor is ours having you, especially with the work that you have done with kids over the years, and just the two wonderful works we want to bring forward today, No One Cries the Wrong Way, Seeing God Through Tears, and the children's book, which, can we say, is an accompaniment. It's called Sometimes Life is Just Not Fair, Hope for Kids Through Grief and Loss. Just two extraordinary works that are, I think, so needed today.
Well, Chris, I do believe there is a need. I think life is hard. Mm-hmm. And I think most people, when we name that out loud, would go, you know, life is hard sometimes. Oh, and those difficulties don't cancel out the blessings. Thanks be to God, you and I are blessed to believe that there is a life beyond this life, that love is forever, and that God is always with us. But whatever your age, 2 to 102, sometimes life is just hard, and I don't know that we always know how to work with kids, for example, on that. And that's why the book Sometimes Life is Just Not Fair.
Yeah, it's a tough subject for parents and grandparents or just people who have close relationships with children when they come to us and they're seeking some type of understanding in some unjust wound they've suffered, or whether it be something that happens at school or if it happens so deep in the interior of the family. And knowing how to talk to them and to give them appropriate guidance, I think that's the struggle that we have.
And I think that many of us have not even all the way thought through some of these questions for ourselves. Mm-hmm. For me, the questions became real when I was in college when a friend of mine died. And I had a special place in her heart, in my heart for her. And I heard the things that people said, you know, that God never gives you more than you can handle, or we're sure God did this for a better reason. And it made me wonder, well, was this God's idea? And so I had to first wrestle with that myself. And then, my goodness, the more I get a sense of the fact that suffering is not God's idea, but God is there and God can bring good out of it, it helps me think rightly. And so I'm very careful about what I say at, you know, funeral homes or when a loved one calls. As soon as we're done chatting, I'm going to meet with a family who just had a loved one died. And there are ways, as you know, to meet them, love them where they are, but not say those cliches that you and I have heard so mm-hmm. often that kind of distort our thinking about God or about life. And the sufferings come in so many ways. You know, the most common suffering, perhaps, is death and life after, you know, all that comes from that. But I even think of kids like this. In an earlier book for children, I thought, who doesn't know what it's like to be left out or uninvited? I have a little prayer for kids on that. Would you mind to hear that?
Oh, please do.
It just goes like this. When no one picks me for their team, dear Jesus, I feel sad. Maybe I'm not strong or fast. That doesn't make me bad. They think I have no value. On their team, I won't start. But to you, oh God, I'm special. You hold me in your heart. And so whether it's not getting picked for a team, the struggles of so many kids when there's fighting or even divorcing in their family, when there's illness or move or all the letting goes, I think we have to grapple with the letting goes that are at the heart of every life, including for a child.
You know, as I reflect on both of the beautiful books that you have here, I'm reminded of something, an adage that someone told me once, that sometimes you have to apply the airplane rule to your life. That means essentially be sure to put the mask over your own face first and then take care of the person next to you, because if you don't do that, it's difficult to help the person next to you or the child next to you. And I think it's the same way when we're dealing with issues, as we're discussing now, when it comes to grief or suffering. And we have to have an understanding and a peace to it before we can properly pass it on.
Oh my gosh, Chris, beautifully said. I remember the first time I heard that from a flight attendant. I'm thinking, not me, man, I'm going to take care of the kid. But a friend said, you know, if the child is resisting that and then I pass out, we both perish. And it's one of the hardest things to do when you're grieving yourself, to also think, well, how do I best love my children through this? So, the book No One Cries the Wrong Way came out of my desire to do what I can to let God use me to help touch people's hearts with just some perspective on death and life after death and grief and how to hang in there in the midst of that, as well as how to care for somebody else. And then the book for children, it has sections in the back specifically for a mom, a dad, a grandma, a grandpa, for how to care for kids, you know, as well as the front whole part, which is thoughts and prayers and activities for the kids themselves on that. But we so need to nurture ourselves. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around grief. You know, when somebody comes to me and a loved one who is died, with a loved one who has died or any other heartache, one of the things I think we need to do is to let them know it's okay to cry. My goodness, you wouldn't cry if you didn't care. Mm-hmm. Those tears are a sign of something good, and the good and the bad don't cancel each other out. You know, you and I believe in a life beyond this life, and we stand on the faith that love is forever. But man, that doesn't take away the fact that life is hard, and therefore it's okay to cry. At the same time, the fact that we're heartbroken doesn't take away our faith. How those two existed side by side became so clear for me when my dad died. He was out buying a Christmas tree with my mom and had a brain aneurysm and never regained consciousness. And we were gathered around his bedside, and I felt like somebody had reached inside of me and ripped out a part of my heart. And it was an ache I had not yet known. And yet, there was such beauty and such goodness. And the faith that we gathered around his bedside with, and the love that was there, and they both existed side by side. And I think for people, then grief kind of comes like waves. It pounds you for a while, and then you're calm. It pounds you for a while, and then you're calm. And there's no way around that. And so naming the mixture of emotions, allowing them to be, finding good people to walk that journey with us, and finding a healthy way to root that in God, allow us to keep an oxygen mask on to care for those who are also entrusted to our care, even when our hearts are broken.
It's so difficult to suffer, isn't it, Father? I mean, I know that may sound like a silly thing to say, because it, by its very nature, it causes us such pain, but knowing that God doesn't desire for us to suffer. A lot of times we think he does, because of something going on inside of us.
There you go. I am convinced that God does not send us to suffering for any reason, even though we hear those cliches. And I know there are people who will often go around carrying guilt because maybe God sent them some suffering to punish them for something they had done wrong earlier. Or maybe God sent them this illness or death in order to bring good out of it. I don't believe that that's what God is like. Mm-hmm. I do believe that in Jesus Christ, we see that we have a God who does not send suffering, but instead sent his Son to embrace it. And one of the most beautiful stories for me about that was told by a man named Solomon Rosenberg, who had been interred with his family in a concentration camp. And it was a work camp, and if you were considered not a good worker, that you were killed. And he used to worry about his younger son, David, who had a weakness in his leg, that one day they were going to say he wasn't a good enough worker. And every night he'd come back from detail and scan the barracks to find his children and his family, and one day he could find none of them, and his heart raced, and finally he found his older boy Jacob weeping, and he said, David, he goes, and through his tears, Jacob said, well, they said he could no longer work, and they took him away. And Solomon said he could feel his heartbreak, but he said, where's Mama? She's a good worker. Certainly they would not take her. And he said, when they came for David, he was afraid. And Mama said, you don't have to be afraid. I will go with you. And she held her son and went into the gas chambers with him so that he would not have to die alone. And I believe that that's why we have crucifixes in all of our institutions. That we have a God who has not abandoned us, but who has sent his son Jesus so that we know that God knows what it is like for us. We have a God who weeps with us, but, or and, I guess is the better word, we have a God who can bring life from death and who will be with us. And when you or I or any of our listeners have a broken heart, we just have to stand on that faith, because it doesn't often feel hopeful. It doesn't often feel good, but we choose to hang in there, trusting that the God who raised Jesus from the death will raise life for us and our loved ones into the world beyond this life, and help us find a way as well.
We're talking with Father Joe Kempf about his book, No One Cries the Wrong Way, Seeing God Through Tears. But also, sometimes life is just not fair. Hope for kids through grief and loss. In this type of work, I mean, when it comes to suffering, even when it comes to that time which we will inevitably face, death, we go into denial over that as well. I mean, we want to run from that as much as we can. And even the proper understanding of death is a challenge for many of us, given what our culture presents to us.
Boy, you, Chris, you are so right. You know, there are people who say, I don't even want to think about it. Mm-hmm. And yet, there is no way around the fact that I and people I love will die. And I'm not a person who walks around fearful of that or sad about all of that. I'm a person of hope, and yet I'm walking in the midst of that at all times with people in my life, in a parish this size, the sheer amount of people who face some kind of heartache, some kind of loss, and especially the death of a loved one. It is my faith that there is a life beyond this life, and really, I don't have to fear death so much. If I learn to do the dying now, it's been well said that you and I have got a lot of dying to do before we die, so that when we die, there's a lot less dying to do. And someday, I will have to leave behind this body the people I know. And I don't look forward to that day at all. But I do believe that there is a life in the life beyond this world. And I do believe that love is forever. And I believe that I will be reunited with my dad and those who've gone before me, with the God who loved us all from before we were even born. And I do think we've got to work with our kids on this as well. They will pick up from us, if we don't even say it, our nonverbals around death and grief and life after death. So it's okay if kids see us cry. That gives them permission. And, you know, with kids, I really think we've got to give them, you know, straightforward, honest answers. You know, it's okay to say, I don't know, you know. But we have to be very careful about those literal things. You probably know some of the things we say that are very literal that can be confusing to kids. So those kind of things matter as well, both what they'll see and how we approach this ourselves, as well as our word.
It's difficult when you have children and you experience the loss of a parent or of a friend or of uncle to know exactly what to say to the kids or how to incorporate them in that process of the passing of that individual, you know, whether to bring them into the hospital, whether to take them to the funeral parlor. And you have some great insight on that.
I think that kids are often the forgotten mourners. I was at a funeral home visiting a family once, and we saw this one child off to the corner, and I went with one of the relatives of the child, and I never presumed to know what a child is thinking. So I said, what's going on? You know, he had this tear going down his eye, and he looked up and he said, I wish people would talk about me some. And something shifted in me right then and there that I know I need to listen to the kids as well. And when we're dealing with a child who has, you know, is facing some loss, I do think typically it's good to bring the child to the funeral home, to the church, to the cemetery. They have visited. vivid imaginations, and what they're going to perceive about a cemetery is usually much more frightening than the reality. Now, younger kids especially will get easily bored. So if I bring a child to a funeral home, I'm mom or dad bringing that child. I want to make sure that there's somebody who can take care of him after he starts to get bored. But to separate them from that is probably not a good idea. And kids have often very straightforward questions, like they look up at the casket where perhaps only the top part is open and would say, like, well, where are her legs or where are their legs? I say give them simple, straightforward, honest answers. I would not say, well, your loved one is asleep, because that often creates anxiety about sleeping. And we tell kids that our loved one is with us in spirit, and that's rightly so. But if we say that, well, daddy is always watching over you, one little girl said, does that mean that daddy watches me when I go to the bathroom? So I try to avoid that, those literal kinds of things. I wouldn't say God needs another angel or God only takes the good ones, because I think such phrases mislead them about God. And I really do love this book, Sometimes Life is Just Not Fair. And, Chris, you know I don't make any money off this, so I'm not, like, trying to sell it for that reason. But I just love the fact that there are some things in here for kids. Could I read one of the 10 prayers for kids?
Oh, I wish you would.
Okay, this one is, the prayer is on grief. You know, because the first few chapters are just about where God is when life is hard and how God can bring good from anything. Then we talk about death and life after death and grief. And this is a prayer from a child. And there's a little CD in the back where the kids read these prayers. Plus, there's a song I wrote, which I really love. I don't sing on it because I figure there's enough suffering in the world. But anyway, but I love this little prayer for a child. It goes, my heart is sad. I miss her so. The world is not the same. I miss the way she looked and smelled, the way she said my name. Dear God, the world seems darker now. There's so much in my heart. I wonder how I'll be okay since we are now apart. No one else could take her place. She means so much, you see. Please tell her that I love her, God. Give her a hug for me. And I picture children somewhere around the country frightened and being able to say this prayer or the other prayers and finding some hope and some sense of the great truth that even in their heartache, love is forever.
So often when these moments come, there's more often than not sudden. And you're not sure how to respond or what to say. And then in some cases, we end up saying nothing.
Right.
And that's not exactly what could be the greatest good for that person, is for
Amen.
Us to isolate them. Talk to us about what we should do.
So, yep, if I know someone is grieving, I think it is so important that we do reach out. I always encourage people to give some thought about what we're going to say or do, because often the stuff we say or do, while well-intentioned, is not so helpful. But I love your insight that we've got to do something. So I think it's not a good idea to say things like, don't cry, or I'm sure God did this for a good reason, or I know exactly how you feel. Oh, that none of those help. Matter of fact, they make things worse. I think usually the best thing is simply to say, I'm sorry, you know, maybe be quiet, maybe hold the person's hand. And if they say, well, why me or whatever, you know, just, it's really hard, isn't it? And sit with them. I remember one woman who was having a hard day, had a husband who cared but just wasn't sure what to say. And she said, well, you can put your arm around me, tell me you love me, and try not to say anything cheerful. And that was pretty helpful. And you know what I also love to do? If I don't know the person who died, like somebody is telling me about their mom or their child or their relative, I say, well, tell me about her. Tell me about him. Because I do want to know. And it's good for the people sometimes to be able to know that people care and to want to keep alive their memory. I think it's good to remember that holidays, birthdays, anniversaries can be intensely painful, you know, and if we talk to somebody and they start crying, it's okay. We just sit with them and they'll know, sometimes by our sitting with them, they'll know that God is with them through us without us even putting words on it. And one final thought on that, you know, sometimes we say, let me know if there's anything that I can do for you. Well, people aren't often going to respond to that, but I like when people get concrete. Here's something good that I can offer. And then you know, I'll pick up your kids or whatever. My hero is a young woman who showed up at a neighbor's house with a mop and a bucket, and she said, my English is not good. She said, but I know you had a dove. I am good at wiping floors. Would you like me to wipe your floor, to clean your floor? And the woman was so grateful, because she would have never picked up the phone and said, could anybody help clean my house for me before we have relatives over? So her neighbor thought of what the gift was she had to offer and gave it. And I think that's a great way for us to be as well.
Yeah, it really paramount that we do reach out. And even after a period of time, because you get almost a flood of people in the first few weeks after a death or a trauma in the family, and then it trickles away, and then there's no one.
Chris, you understand grief. You understand the human condition, and I love that. I'm so glad your listeners get you, because they get a chance to hear somebody that gets that so much. You're right. And then it seems like the rest of the world goes on as if nothing ever happened. You know, from that driving in the funeral procession, watching the cars go by as if nothing happened, to going through the, you know, your loved one's things, to that growing realization that they're never walking back into your arms, and watching the rest of the world go by, there is such a loneliness. We offer a number of grief groups per year here. We make it a point to contact people sometimes on their anniversary of their death, but for years to come. I found myself saying yesterday on the phone to a person who, I said, I know this is your first Father's Day without your dad. You know, what's that like for you? You're right, the world goes on, and if we can let people know that we know, it takes away a little bit of the loneliness and helps them hang on as God slowly brings healing and peace in the midst of their heartache. The world will be forever different for them, or for anyone who's lost a loved one. But by our care for them, we can help them know that God is with them, and the promise is true. Love is forever.
Mm. Yeah, from what I hear in what you're saying, Father, is that in a very real way, things won't change if, when we turn it over to Christ, He'll transform it. And it won't necessarily take away the pain of that loss, but He can transform it.
Oh, my goodness. Chris, exactly. And how many of the beautiful things in life were born of pain? It was the death of my friend and colleague that made me start to grapple with this. It was when my dad died, someone said to me, you're part of a club that you never wanted to belong to. And I get that. There is something that's in me that I could never know except through pain. And that is exactly what God does. You know, I like the fact that the scriptures say Jesus was raised from the dead. He could not raise himself. He was raised from the dead, and so us. And if we stay true and as healthy as we can, God will transform our heartache, transform our sufferings, and in some ways make us a better instrument of his love in the world. And I don't want to ever glorify suffering or make our sound too glib. It is horrific to have to walk through the heartache many people have to walk through. But there is a healing that comes through grace and over time, that God will slowly transform even this heartache into something beautiful for the world. You're right, there's always a pain, but it comes to a different place and becomes part of the beauty of us for the world.
When you're speaking, it reminds me of the wounds that Christ, even after the resurrection, he still had the wounds,
right.
But they were transformed.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my gosh. Yep. And somebody once said that when we get to heaven, somebody will say, well, show me your scars. Where did you hurt for love? And to think that I could or should get through this world without some heartache or without paying a price for love is not what Christ did. And I agree, we carry those wounds with us forever, but they are transformed. Beautifully put, Chris.
And Father, in your role particularly in that great sacrament of service, your priesthood, I can't imagine what it's like for you to walk with so many in your parish and those who reach out to you because of the work that you have done. I think people back off from helping those who are grieving because it's as though that grief becomes a part of us as well. I mean, with that solidarity that you write about. And We're in a culture now that runs from any kind of suffering.
There you go.
Here's a pill, or buy this, or take that. So for us to reach out is something, but it must be particular ache in the priestly heart.
Oh, Chris, you're sweet to say that, because I think it's mine would be very much like you, and all those who reach out in care. You know, there are times where I can't not weep. Now, when I'm leading a funeral service, I'm usually so nervous to love the people well and do a good job that is most commonly after everybody goes away that I just find myself at tears, I probably do walk into that more than most. And there are times where it's just hard when I'm with somebody who's burying a child who took his or her own life, or a while back walking down to the cemetery with Dad holding the casket of his infant daughter who lived but a few days. I was trying to read this little scripture from Isaiah, "Could a mother forget her infant?" And I couldn't get those words out. And, well, you know what? If people won't usually see that when I'm leading the service, but it's okay that they did in this case because they know that I care. But it is my faith and the goodness of so many people that allows me as a priest and others to hang in there in the midst of people, knowing that there is a redemptive nature to suffering, that there is a hope for it. If I believed it was all up to me to heal people, mm-hmm. It would be too much. But I know that there is a God who's with us and so many good people. And you know, when I die, I want to have done my part. I really do. And that's why, I mean, some people think, jeepers, Father, why did you do all of this? Or the next thing I do is because I want to have done what part I can, even as I am so grateful for those people who loved me well. And Chris, I bet you've had them as well. We would be forever grateful with those who did what little bit they could. And you never know what difference a little act of kindness might make.
Wow. Well, I wish we had more time, Father. Father Joe Kemp, thank you so much.
Chris, God bless you. Thank you so much as well.
With Father Joe Kemp, we've gone inside the pages of No One Cries the Wrong Way, Seeing God Through Tears, and Sometimes Life is Just Not Fair, Hope for Kids Through Grief and Loss. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to osv.com, the website for its publisher, Our Sunday Visitor, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.